Good evening, and welcome to Good Evening, the Alfred Hitchcock Podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Shea Mutella, and joining me, as always, is my ever-constant co-hosts, Tom Caldwell and Chris Haig. Chris, quit following me. Like, just leave me alone. It's just a headlight. Just leave me alone.
I have to keep following you because you've pronounced my surname right for the first time in 4 years.
I'm getting better. Yeah. Getting better. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, but no, that's why I'm following you. I'm like, thank you.
I was contemplating, I was just about going to switch it to Chris Huggy.
It's fine, to be fair, before we started recording, I was saying, I might just ask Brandon if he's seen the Snyder Cut yet.
I have not seen the Snyder Cut yet.
Yeah.
As we record this, the Snyder Cut came out, what, like 3 or 4 days ago? Or was it a week ago?
It's about a week. Yeah, it's about a week ago, I think. I think I watched it last week. Yeah.
Did you like it?
It's fine. It's way too long. It doesn't need to be 4 hours. There's a lot of stuff you could have cut out, but it is better. That's my only thing. I'm like, yeah, it's objectively a better film, but it doesn't need to be 4 hours. It's just, it's very self-indulgent, but there's some really cool stuff in there. So I'm sort of like a 6.5, 7 out of 10 kind of guy.
Okay. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm okay.
We're going to have an argument, and people will not be able to hear us argue, okay?
Okay.
Let's do it. Go. Sure.
I have no clue what you're talking about.
The start of the episode when they're arguing and you can't hear anything.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because it's just through the window. It's such an awesome scene. How you doing, buddy?
I'm all right. This will be good. I'm enjoying reviewing all the old TV shows.
Excellent. Right on. Well, today we're going to be covering the episode of the Alfred Hitchcock Presents that's called One More Mile to Go. This was originally broadcast on the 7th of April, 1957, as part of the second season of Alfred Hitchcock Presents. And the synopsis goes, Sam Jacoby and his nagging wife argue, although we don't really know that she's nagging because we don't really hear anything. And he accidentally kills her by striking her with a rod. Accident? I don't know.
Yeah.
Anger? Yeah, sure. So he decides to dump her body in a lake. Jacoby puts the body in his car trunk and takes off. A motorcycle policeman repeatedly stops him after seeing Jacoby's burnt-out taillight. Eventually, the officer tells him to follow him to the station where a police mechanic will open the trunk and change the bulb. Dun-dun-dun. So, Tom, what did you think of this episode?
I enjoyed it. I found, again, these are television series. They're quick. They're 22 minutes long. They have to move very quickly. So we start off really fast seeing a big argument between the husband and wife. And, you know, she just pushed him too far. He clubs her. She dies. And she's in the trunk of the car. Like, it all moves very, very quickly. But it's an interesting dynamic between the policeman and the main character back and forth. Like, it's all about them pushing each other, and he really, really, really doesn't want the cop to open the trunk of that car. That's not going to be a good idea.
Yep. Chris, would this have been better served had there been a 4-hour Snyder Cut?
It would have been like 2 hours leading up to the fight and then everything in slow motion while Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah played over it. No. And by the way, that isn't a spoiler. He's used it in so many films. No, I mean, I enjoyed this, and I think the opening scene is great because, like Tom said, and like you said, it's basically an outside shot, and you see the couple fighting. They're having an absolute go at each other. He starts to walk away and she's like getting in front of him and she throws his paper in the fire and all that sort of thing. But I still don't think it's an accidental death because, like, he it's not like, oh, you know, he meant to hit something else and she got in the way. He fully just clubs her once with a poker.
Right.
And then almost goes to the phone and then goes, best not. So, like, it's manslaughter, really, at worst. Or it's like a crime of passion. But I think it's really interesting because it obviously reminds me of Rear Window because it's a similar setup in effect. It's a guy who's killed his wife, but almost as if we were on Thorwald's side during this. Mm-hmm. And like Tom said, because it is so short, it is only about, what, 20, 25 minutes? They're not long episodes. It's less about, oh, you know, drawing out the plot and establishing character. This one is entirely about the suspense and about the sort of the cat and mouse of the main guy and his pursuer, which in this case is the cop, and it's kind of every time they go into a garage, it's like, oh, you need to treat this car better. You know, we're gonna do this to the trunk and everything, and you're there just going like, oh god, is this when they're gonna find the body? Is this when they're gonna find it? And I really enjoyed this as like an exercise in suspense. I thought it was really well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a prime example of Hitchcock at the top of his game in this series. I mean, what was the last one that we talked about? Was the one where she just kept inventing the stories of what may have happened to the guy's wife, and I'm like, that doesn't really feel like a Hitchcock, but this one really does feel very, very Hitchcock. And, you know, that opening scene where all we do is see the argument through the window is really, really fascinating, because it doesn't matter what they're arguing about, right? Like, people argue about whatever. It doesn't matter what
that's a MacGuffin.
Yeah,
that's exactly, the MacGuffin, yeah. Whatever the argument is. It's just, it's about the argument that leads to the death, and then what happens after that, right? And his decision to try and hide the body, and, you know, how is that going to be explained later on? Doesn't matter. We don't need to worry about that. But it's really is a masterwork in the art of suspense. Now, watching this, like, I want to kill this cop because this cop is so annoying. And it's like, I think this cop goes like way, way overboard with following this guy and being so obsessive over this taillight. Like, I think it goes way too far. And I don't think any cop would ever do this, no matter how slow a night they're having. You issue the ticket, you let the guy go, and that's it. Right? I think that him drawing on, oh, well, what if you died? Here, I'll just completely destroy your trunk, because at least you're not going to kill somebody, maybe. Or at least you're not going to die, maybe. At least you're not going to car accident, but I'm just going to destroy your trunk. And then, I don't know, like, it's way over the top for this cop. But, that said, it is so suspenseful, and you don't want the guy to get caught. And again, I keep saying it in these episodes, I'm on the side of the killer a couple of times. It's like,
yeah,
I want this guy to get away with this murder. And it's like, why do I feel this way? I feel so evil and bad and guilty when I feel that way.
Ah, but the episode's designed to make you feel that way, because all you see is, you don't see, you know, what's led up to the incident. All you see is her, you know, the wife acting aggressive. Like I said, she throws the paper, she's all but shoving him, she's saying, oh, well, you're going to do that sort of thing, and it's an argument, and so you are kind of predisposed, that's the word, God, to be on his side. So, you know, I think it does happen, and it happens in episodes that we're going to cover, where you're like, should they get away with it? Well, no, because then if you look at, like, you know, like I said, Rear Window, it's all from, you know, an outsider perspective, and you're like, oh, no, that you want to get caught and all that sort of thing. But from what you hear of that situation, it's still like, you know, a nagging, verbally abusive partner, and the other person has snapped and killed them, and you're kind of like, well, I mean, you shouldn't have done it, but I don't feel bad, or I don't feel as, you know, righteous, you should go to prison about it. So it's an interesting one. But yeah, it's so weird. I made notes when I was watching it, and for some reason I put, love the sound design of this one.
Mm.
And the weird thing is, I can't remember why. There must have been really something in the sound design that was like, oh, I love this. And I wonder if it was just because it was all the... Because I remember some of the sounds really being magnified during the like the garage scenes where...
Well, there's no talking for like 8 or 9 minutes or something like that of this episode, right?
So there's a lot of him driving the car silently. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was, yeah, might have been because it was such a distinctive choice to, oh yeah, for a good chunk of the episode, it's entirely silent and it's all diegetic sounds that you're hearing. You know, there's no voice over him going, oh, I didn't mean to kill my wife or anything. It's great acting as well, because it's just him. And, you know, kind of just doing stuff on his own without actually saying anything, that I thought was great.
That's an interesting point, Chris, because most episodes of this type of TV series, they would have some type of internal monologue about him contemplating what he just did. You know, like the last one with the woman writing about the neighbors, like it was all in her internal dialogue, right? Her internal monologue. So that's a really interesting point, and I think that's what makes this episode so unique and so tense at the beginning, is there is none of that.
How many references to Psycho did you spot? How many elements of this TV show that are very similar to Psycho?
Oh my god, yeah.
Well, I got the car, I guess. I never considered it. What else did you see, Tom?
The body and trunk of car. Car will likely end up in the water, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to dispose of the woman's body in the trunk of the car. And the other big one, like Chris just kind of pointed one out to me inadvertently here, but the man driving, you know, and having all that tension, I'm going to get away from this, is a psycho thing. But also just having the cop in his face in the window of the car, having that uniform patrol cop standing there grilling him inside, like face to face in the window of the car.
When was Psycho? 1960, I think it was.
Yes.
Yeah, so it would have been shortly after this. It would have been kind of in the works at the same time.
This would have been like 3 or 4 years later. Like, this aired April of 57, you know, so, you know, 3 years, 3.5 years before Psycho came out.
But it's very interesting, too, with the... So the woman's knocked out. We're assuming she's dead. She's in the trunk of the car. And the rest of the episode is all about this flashing taillight. The power comes on, the power goes off. Is the bulb working? Is it not? Is it flashing? Is it not? So there's two things that could be happening here. Is she perhaps alive in the trunk and she's trying to fidget and get their attention by all she can do is flash the light bulb?
Like, she's not able, I had that thought too, yeah.
She's not able to actually talk or scream or anything, but she's fidgeting with the light bulb to get their attention. Or is it her ghost is like, I'm going to get the cop to open the trunk of the car. I'm going to mess with the light bulb. And because if that cop opens that trunk and finds that body, it's, you know, game over for our main character, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I had that thought the first time I watched this was when Annie and Catherine covered it on their show. And watching it again this time, there's that distinct shot when the car leaves the garage the first time, that tail light is on, right? So, like, there's a clear shot. If you do a rewatch of the episode where that light is on and there's a very specific shot of that taillight, and I was watching for it because I'm like, they didn't show the other one. Maybe it was the other taillight that was out, but no, it turned out that it was actually the driver's side taillight. Right. So
I just love that they're using these old cars where you could actually just get a screwdriver and go buy a bulb and just put it in. And 5 minutes later, I grew up learning to drive on a 64 Chevy, which would be older than the car that is in the movie, but the fact that you were able to just open the trunk and put the light bulb in and out was so nice compared to nowadays you have to pay $100 at an auto body shop to have it done, right?
And it takes them like 6 hours to do it because they got to take away half your car.
Exactly.
So. Oh, God. So I was thinking I'd love that ending. You know, if he's at the garage and he says, oh, well, we're going to open it, that sort of thing, and then all of a sudden a hand bursts out the tail light and she's alive. You know, they say that thing, if you can knock the tail, if you, like, fun a bit of kidnapping advice, if you're in the trunk of a car, you can knock the tail light out and kind of wave your hand and signal, and that's apparently a thing that people can do. So I just had that vision, because I never twigged that until you started talking about it, when you were saying, oh, well, you know, the light flickering, I thought, oh, it's like a kind of... a bit of a ghost situation, a bit of like a psychological Edgar Allan Poe sort of thing. But no, I never even considered the fact that she might actually still be just alive, and she kind of wakes up in the trunk, realizes what's happened, and she's like, right, I'm going to... Because that is a whole different movie, and I would love... In fact, I think it's a Halle Berry movie, and I would love to see a proper Hitchcock take on that. So
it's that last shot of the tail, like, just blinking a whole bunch that makes you think maybe she's alive and fiddling with
it. Well, and it's an open-ended... Like, there is no conclusion to the film. We don't know, or to the movie. The episode. We don't know what happens at the end. Does he get caught? Does he get away with it?
No, there's no monologue.
Like, so it gives you, it allows the viewer to make their own ending and to keep thinking about the story in their head, right? And that in essence, really makes it longer than the television episode, because you can go on and make up your own ending, right?
What is your ending, Tom? What do you think happened?
I would imagine, I don't know, like, you kind of assume that, like you said, we're rooting for the bad guy, so we're kind of rooting for him to be able to dispose the body and get away with it, right? And, but then he has to explain why his wife disappeared and all that other stuff, right?
Yeah.
I kind of assume that, he ends up, disposing of the body and getting away with it. But it could end up that he ends up in another conflict with the policeman, right? And maybe the policeman opens the trunk and arrests the guy, and the guy goes to jail for murder.
Yeah, or he kills the police officer. The guy opens the trunk and just kills the officer too. We don't know.
When the,
and there's no outro, so yeah.
When the gas station mechanic went back into the gas station to get that crowbar, that's what I thought was going to happen.
Mm.
I imagined Babe Ruth coming out swinging with that crowbar, and now he's got a cop and a gas station attendant to take body to take care of. So all that gasoline would have come in handy.
Yeah. Excellent. Right on. Well, do you guys have any other comments that you'd like to make on the episode?
I'm good. Two quick technical things. That fireplace, mm-hmm. There's no way that was a regular fire. It's obviously some kind of gas propane fire, because if flames were burning that high in a fire in my house, I'd be worried. And there's an interesting thing that they did, I'm sure, when in the scene where the man is driving on the highway and the cop pulls him over and gives him the change for the $5, and the rear screen projection that's happening in front of the car, that's what I believe is called shooting day for night. So they film during the day, but they use special lenses that darken the image. And basically it just allows them to work during the day, and it's easier than arranging a night shoot. But that's sort of an old-fashioned TV technical trick that I'm pretty confident they were employing when they shot this.
Yeah, they use a lot of day for night. Yeah, what day for night does is actually, like, the lens itself is open less, so less light gets in. So just like your eyes, like when you're outside and it's really bright and then you come into the house where it's dark, it takes your while, like it feels darker in the house than it actually is. So that's what it is. It's letting less light in so it looks darker. So yeah, lots of day for night done in this time of year. Awesome. Yeah, I love this episode. I think this episode is great. Tom, how many burnt out taillights would you give this?
I would give it 4 out of 5 replacement bulbs that you should always carry in your car.
Chris, how would you rate this?
I would give this 4 out of 5 pokers that you've accidentally killed or not killed your wife with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would probably give this a 5. Like, even with the police officer being annoying, it's still very, very suspenseful to me, and I think this is top-tier Alfred Hitchcock Presents. So, excellent. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed our discussion today on One More Mile to Go. We will be back next week. We got a busy month this month with some Alfred Hitchcock Presents episodes. We got the wonderful Vincent Price joining us next time as we discuss The Perfect Crime. But until then, good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.